As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
What follows may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
The world is full of stories. Stories of mysteries. Of curiosities. Of oddities. Join Kat and Jethro Gilligan Toth for the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected, as they lift the lid and cautiously peer inside the box of oddities.
So we really need to address the acoustic issues here in this room. It's not so bad right now, but I've got a blanket over my head again.
And yeah.
Since we moved, it's been an ongoing fight. It seems like we get it dialed in, and I think it's the high ceilings, and we've talked about this probably way more than we should.
You look cute with your little blanket fort situation going on.
Yeah, with the cardboard and the blankets, it's like a shanty town.
That's pretty Hoovervillish.
So we're getting a puppy, so that's nice.
Nice segue.
Thanks. I want to keep things moving because this blanket's slipping off my head. Well, not a new dog.
It's a certified pre-owned puppy dog.
Right. It's gently used. I think he's like eight, 9 years old, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
A rescue, and he'll be in the house sometime in the next, I think we're getting him right after we get back from our New York show.
Yes. We actually decided that we weren't going to stay in New York for the number of days that we thought we were going to stay in New York for because we wanted to get back and get the dog.
Yeah.
So it's live show, heading home for a dog.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. We had to change our flights and everything.
I'm not sad about it.
No, I'm not either. I'm looking forward to it. If you've got a suggestion for a name, we're looking for one. You can send it to us either email or on social media or something like that. And we certainly do appreciate you taking the time to be part of our freak family.
You said that you had a pretty good story for me this week, yeah?
I think so. I want to talk about bringing animals back from the dead.
Okay.
Now, do you remember, it was like, I don't know, 800 episodes ago or so, the early scientific work of a guy named Giovanni Aldini?
Vaguely.
Yeah. He was the physicist nephew of world-renowned electrical pioneer and frog executioner Luigi Galvani.
That's right, yeah.
Which is where we get the term galvanized. But he conducted electrical experiments in an attempt to reanimate dead animals. And if he was able to do that, he wanted to move on to human beings and reanimate them using electricity. In a way, it was an inspiration for Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
One demonstration in the early 1800s was when he applied electrical diodes from a powerfully charged Leyden jar to the head of a freshly slaughtered ox. And that caused the eyelids and the nose and the tongue to convulse and spasm. And the audience was convinced that he was right on the threshold of bringing animals back to life.
But I don't understand the purpose of this kind of experiment, because if the animal died of like old age, then it's just going to die again, right? I mean, you can bring it back to life, but it's still old.
He did eventually move on to human beings with similar results. He wasn't successful.
Right, lots of flopping around.
Lots of, jerking around on the table.
I had a cousin who was expelled from high school for that.
Yeah, kids today with their boogaloo pants and their dances. So anyway, even though he wasn't able to bring any animal or any human or any carcass back to life, he did, however, maintain that one day science would progress to a point where it would be possible to bring back an animal from the dead. And that day is here. But just not the way that Giovanni Aldini envisioned it. Mm-hmm. Scientists recently were successful in bringing back to life a black-footed ferret whose original version has been dead for about 30 years.
What do you mean, original version?
Well, we're talking about DNA. We're talking about cloning, bringing an animal back to life through cloning.
Oh, okay.
All right. Now, this is North America's only ferret species, and it had been on the endangered list. In fact, it was thought to have been extinct for generations. But in 1981, they found seven of these little guys alive and well on a ranch in Wyoming. Yeah. And so they, of course, immediately captured them in order to protect them. One was named Willa, and Willa died in 1988. Scientists then sent her tissue to a frozen zoo, which is operated by San Diego Zoo Global. They store animal tissue from estimates are about 1,100 species worldwide.
Oh, wow.
And the idea, of course, at least in 1988, was perhaps sometime in the future, we could perform some sort of an experiment to resurrect this endangered species. Very endangered. There were only six of them left at that point.
That we knew of.
That we knew of. Freezing Willa would allow future scientists a way to bring back black-footed ferret genes and reinstall them into the group. Freezing Willa would allow future scientists a way to bring the black-footed ferret genes back and install them into the ferret population.
I caught an ermine in my bread drawer once.
You did catch an ermine in your bread drawer. I was there for that. That was the weirdest friggin' thing. An ermine's like a big weasel. This one was completely white.
Except for the little tip of his tail. It was so cute.
And we hear this banging around in your bread drawer, and you open the drawer, and this, it was like whack-a-mole. This ermine just stood up and looked at you like, what the fuck?
That's what I said.
That's what I said, too. And we actually trapped him and put him in your truck and drove him to the woods and let him go.
Yeah. I named him Ermy.
So the scientists extracted the genes from Willa's tissue, and they were fertilized with an embryo that was carried by a regular domestic ferret. And that ferret gave birth to a cute little clone, and they named it Elizabeth Ann.
Aww.
So a very successful and a giant step in the right direction for perhaps bringing extinct species back to life or enhancing endangered species to prevent them from becoming extinct.
Now, this is straight up Willa business, right? It's not like a combo of Willa and the domestic ferret.
No, the domestic ferret was just used
the carrier
as a carrier.
Okay.
In this case, There were still some black-footed ferrets out there, mm-hmm. but they were able to take her genes, Willa's genes, and reinsert them back into the population to help strengthen diversity in the population.
Got it. Okay.
But now we're taking it to the next step. There is a plan to recreate mammoths and return them to the wild, the tundra in Siberia. Bioscience and genetics company named Colossal has just raised $15 million in an attempt to resurrect, the woolly mammoth, and to do it. They're working on it right now.
Well, I guess that would give the polar bears something to eat.
That's true. The company was co-founded by Ben Lamb, who is a tech and software entrepreneur. His partner is George Church. And he's a professor of genetics at Harvard Medical School, and he was involved in the pioneering new approach of gene editing, which is taking genetics to a whole new level.
Mm.
The plan is to recreate mammoths and return them to the wild. I already said that. Meh. Church said in an article in The Guardian, quote, "Our goal is to make a cold-resistant elephant, but it's going to look and behave like a mammoth. Not because we're trying to trick anybody, but because we want something that is functionally equivalent to the mammoth that will enjoy its time in the minus 40 centigrade weather."
But for what benefit?
The idea is that they would do all the things that mammoths would do, in particular, knocking down trees. They believe that reintroducing the elephant-mammoth hybrids into the Arctic tundra might help restore the habitat that has been degraded and help combat the impacts of climate change. By knocking trees down, the mammoths would help to restore the former Arctic grasslands. And the scope of this project is even bigger than mammals. They are thinking in terms of bringing extinct creatures back and reintroducing them into their regular natural habitat in hopes of correcting the impact that their extinction had created.
They kind of want to quantum leap the situation there.
Yeah.
Okay. No, and that makes sense. It's like when, I don't know if you've read the story about when wolves were taken out of a certain national park, the rivers were affected. And it was this whole thing about how the wolves affected the deer and the deer affected the this and the this affected this. And that affected how the river moved in this national park. And when they reintroduced the wolves, everything kind of got back into its natural cycle.
This is exactly the theory that they're operating on.
Okay.
The goal is to initially create an elephant-mammoth hybrid by making embryos in the laboratory that carry woolly mammoth DNA. Their plan is this. Number one, to extract genome from the frozen woolly mammoth specimens and then compare them with Asian elephant genomes that would reveal the mammoth specific genes by comparing the two. Number two, skin cells from an Asian elephant would be edited to carry the mammoth genes. Number three, an egg is created in the lab from stem cells. Its nucleus is then replaced with the nucleus from the skin cell containing the mammoth DNA. And finally, the egg is stimulated to start dividing, and it is carried to term either in an Asian elephant or perhaps even a potential artificial womb, which they're developing. So this would be really a mammoth Asian elephant hybrid.
Okay.
So they're looking to try, not necessarily to bring back the woolly mammoth, but to splice some of its attributes genetically into an existing elephant to create a woolly mammoth hybrid that could survive in that environment and help to bring the ecosystem back into sync.
Well, that makes sense.
Now, not surprisingly, all scientists are not behind this.
Sure.
Dr. Victoria Ridge, an evolutionary biologist at the Natural History Museum, said, quote, "My personal thinking is that the justifications for giving the idea that you could geoengineer an Arctic environment using a herd of mammals isn't plausible. The scale at which you'd have to do this experiment is enormous. You're talking about hundreds of thousands of mammoths, which take about 22 months apiece to gestate and 30 years to grow to maturity." Now, the counter coming from the colossal firm is that, quote, "Our goal isn't just to bring back the mammoth, but to bring back interbreedable herds that are successfully rewilded back into the Arctic region." In other words, they're not trying to create tens of thousands of them, just enough to get them going.
Right. And then encourage the old...
Yeah. Mammoth naughty time. At this point, the plan is in action. It's moving forward with preliminary lab work underway. And granted, there are huge hurdles to overcome.
Well, yeah, they're mammoth.
But assuming that the researchers can overcome these hurdles, they expect to have their first set of mammoth hybrid calves by the year 2027. My source information was Gizmodo, The Guardian, and USA Today.
Wow. You know, I'm still torn about how I feel personally about this kind of experimenting. I feel like there's a lot of money going into a kind of what-if scenario where lives are at stake, mm-hmm. when we could just, like, I don't know, do other stuff that is good.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when you compare like the ferret story mm-hmm. to the mammoth story, the ferret story I'm all on board with. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got these cute little creatures. There's six of them left. Let's help reinforce their population through genetic manipulation. I'm a bit crossed up on the whole woolly mammoth thing. I don't know quite how I feel about that. I think I lean a little bit toward not doing it, but what's the difference, really? The fact that there are no woolly mammoths versus the fact that there are six or seven ferrets left, what's the difference, really?
I am kind of on the opposite side of things. I feel like if I had to choose between either experiment being successful, I might vote mammoth, one, because of the environmental goals, and two, because it takes them longer to reproduce. And if you had some sort of weird rodent malfunction and all of a sudden there's like hundreds of thousands of these little weasels that are smarter than us, then they could Skynet the shit out of us.
Yeah. Plus, it's very difficult for a woolly mammoth to end up in your bread drawer.
And now, that thing in the middle. In 2008, a Grapevine, Texas man was arrested for impersonating an undercover police officer after he pulled over several cars using police lights he should not have had. Drivers were tipped off when he showed them his badge, which in fact was a Chipotle gift card with the word police scratched on it.
Did you know that the curator used to dream of being a game show announcer? Hard to believe, right? This is the Box of Oddities.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. You know, as your kids get older, there are some things about parenting that gets easier. I remember once hearing my sister tell my little niece, "If you put your pants on, I'll give you some Fresca."
And when kids can start to reason that they get something if they do something right, it's a lot easier to manage them.
Having that conversation about money with your kids, that's not the easiest thing in the world. Fact is, kids won't really know how to manage their money until they're actually in charge of it, and that's where Greenlight can help.
Greenlight is a debit card and money app made just for families. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on the kids' spending and savings, while kids and teens build money confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills.
Your kids will learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely thanks to the games that teach kids skills in a fun, accessible way.
When I was a kid, I had expected chores, and then I had bonus chores. And bonus chores were where I earned money. And so if you're thinking like, hey, my kids should be doing stuff around the house, yeah, no, you're not wrong. But maybe there's extra ways that they can learn how to be a successful financial money person.
What was one of the bonus chores that you had to do?
Rub my mom's feet.
And what did that pay?
I don't know, like a quarter or something.
Millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's the easy, convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and families to navigate their life together.
Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/oddities. That's greenlight.com/oddities to try Greenlight for free.
Greenlight.com/oddities.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas, plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. On our show, we help listeners like you make the most of your finances. I sit down with NerdWallet's team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. We answer your real-world money questions and break down the latest personal finance news. The nerds will give you the clarity you need by cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. We don't promote get-rich-quick schemes or hype unrealistic side hustles. Instead, we offer practical knowledge that you can apply in your everyday life. You'll learn about strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. And you'll walk away with the confidence you need to ensure that your money is always working as hard as you are. So turn to the nerds to answer your real-world money questions and get insights that can help you make the smartest financial decisions for your life. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
The Box of Oddities with Kat and Jethro Gilligan Toth.
Jocelyn sent us a Facebook message. I finally got to listen to episode 373, and that sound straight up said, "I want your soul." So I'm not sleeping tonight. Thanks for that. But not sure if Kat got distracted or if you don't know. The coolest thing about those human stripes, you talked about how...
Lashko lines?
Yeah. And not everybody's are visible.
Mm-hmm.
Cats can see them.
Not me.
Not you, though. So cats can see the human stripes. If you have ever had a pet cat, they knew what your stripes looked like.
I did forget to mention that. I'm terribly sorry. Because it is cool.
And then somebody else commented on your post regarding that story. Barry said, "Amazing. Celestial maps? Question mark?" Now let's think about that for a moment. I'm looking at that picture, and it does look like one of those animated depictions of what the galaxies look like.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe ancient aliens installed a return roadmap.
Maybe.
To their home planet in our DNA. Also looks a little bit like a cinnamon roll. All right, my love, what do you have for me?
In 1987, the body of John Powell came to the Hamilton County Coroner's Office. Now, months before, in March of 87, Powell had been hospitalized from a motorcycle accident, and he'd been on life support until he died rather unexpectedly. Dr. Lehman was on duty when Powell came into the coroner's office. What was unusual, he told reporters, was when we opened the stomach, I could smell cyanide.
Huh.
He said he had worked with cyanide and its burnt almond-like smell many can't detect, but he smelled it right away. Dr. Lehman ruled the death a homicide, and the coroner's office contacted the Cincinnati Police Department. Donald Harvey became a person of interest when investigators learned that he'd been forced to resign from the Cincinnati VA hospital after he was caught stealing body parts for occult rituals.
Yeah, that's...
You can see how that...
That's normally frowned upon,
sure.
I would think.
Mm-hmm. Harvey, then in his mid-30s, had grown up poor in the mountains of eastern Kentucky. He dropped out of high school but received his GED, and he started working in the medical industry when he was 18. He'd been a regular visitor to a Kentucky hospital when his grandfather was dying, and he was eventually offered an orderly position, which he accepted. He gave patients medicines and saw to both their medical and personal needs.
Do you remember the 80s classic comedy, The Disorderly Orderlies with the Fat Boys?
No.
Me neither.
So the police approached Harvey, who refused a lie detector test, and he was consequently brought in for questioning. There, he confessed to having killed Powell.
Mm.
He said he felt sorry for Powell and his family, who was just watching him waste away in this hospital bed.
So he's saying it was a mercy killing.
Yeah, he wanted to end everyone's suffering.
Whether they wanted to end it or not.
Pat Minarson, who was an anchor at Cincinnati station WCPO-TV, was reporting on this case, and he thought, geez, isn't it weird that this guy has spent almost two decades dealing with patients, and suddenly he had this feeling like he had to end this one person's suffering? It just seems strange.
Right, and that's the only one he got caught for.
Right, it just, it doesn't seem likely. So... He said shortly after Harvey was arrested for Powell's murder, a call came into the newsroom. It was a nurse calling from Drake Hospital. The nurse said, "We think that there were others, and we need you to do something." She wouldn't give her name, but she did give the names of seven or eight patients that she thinks might have been connected to Harvey.
Hmm.
Not long after that, he got a call from that nurse again, who had another nurse with her. And in the article that I was reading, it mentioned that Minarson was at home framing his basement while this call came in. And I just thought that was the weirdest tidbit to include.
Yeah. Doing a little handyman work.
Yep. So the second nurse said that she thought that there were a few patients that were connected to this as well. And so over a dozen names were provided. And the nurses let Menarsin know how Harvey had been connected to them at the time of their death. So Menarsin reached out to Harvey's attorney. That guy's name was William Whalen before the trial. And he shared this information that he had received from the nurses. I mean, he has to. He has to. By law, you're entitled. It's called disclosure.
I think I would have maybe contacted the prosecuting attorney, the district attorney, as opposed to the defense attorney.
Well, the defense attorney was like, oof, yeah, I don't think so. He hasn't said anything about killing a bunch of other people.
Sure.
So he went to ask Harvey. He was like, hey, have you maybe, I don't know, killed anyone else? And Harvey was like, yeah, probably around 70 people.
Oh, my God. 70?
So the defense attorney reached back out to this reporter and was like, keep digging because you are not wrong.
Wow, the defense attorney.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Didn't teach you that in law school either. Anyway, Harvey confessed to dozens of murders at Drake Hospital, Cincinnati's VA Medical Hospital, and the Old Marymount Hospital in Kentucky.
Was he traveling to kill people?
There was that one job he got fired from because of the body parts stealing.
Oh,
so
I see.
He had to move around a bit.
Okay, all right.
According to reports, Harvey would place a skull beside a burning candle, read off a list of names, and look into the flames flicker to determine who he would kill.
Jesus.
I had to have help from somewhere, Harvey once said. So it was the flame. The flame gave him the idea.
Cool.
Yeah. He used many methods to kill his victims. Arsenic, cyanide, insulin, suffocation, miscellaneous poisonings, morphine, turning off ventilators, administration of fluid tainted with hepatitis, insertion of a coat hanger into a catheter.
Oh, my God. So this guy did not have a preferred MO.
No.
He mixed it up.
Yeah. And when you think about inserting a coat hanger into a catheter to puncture abdominal walls, that doesn't sound like a mercy killing to me.
No.
But he told investigators that he did it to stop the suffering of those around him and the suffering of their families. And Harvey had been able to stay under the radar because, for the most part, he worked in parts of the hospital where the patients weren't expected to live anyway.
And probably the fact that he killed so many people in so many different ways,
right.
It was hard to see a pattern.
But Harvey did not limit his victims to helpless hospital patients.
Well, there's a big surprise.
When he suspected his lover and roommate, Carl Howler, of infidelity, he poisoned him. He didn't die, though. He just made him too sick to leave their apartment.
Oh, God.
He also killed Howler's father with arsenic. He also poisoned two of his neighbors, Diane Alexander, by putting a serum of hepatitis in her drink, and killing the other, Helen Metzger, by putting arsenic in her pie. Hamilton County Prosecutor Joe Dieter said, I mean, he damn near killed his entire apartment building. He killed the neighbor's dog. I mean, he just liked killing.
Can you imagine living in that guy's apartment building?
Like the afterwards of that?
Or just during the period where people are starting to suspect things and it's like, yeah, don't invite Harvey over to the barbecue. And better yet, don't go to one of his.
Yeah.
So do we know about his background?
We know a little bit. So he didn't grow up in a really great situation. And it is said that he was abused as a child. So there wasn't a healthy environment for normal growth.
Mm.
In August of 1987, Harvey pled guilty to 24 counts of first-degree murder. This was an attempt to avoid the death penalty, because if you had been found to be involved in more than two murders, I guess the death penalty could be on the table. And where they found out it was more than just the Powell's murder. So this was the course they decided to go with. He was also charged with four counts of attempted murder and one count of felonious assault. The plea agreement, though, did allow prosecutors to seek the death penalty if more murders came to light. So with this in mind, in November, Harvey pled guilty to killing nine patients at Marymount in the 1970s. So while they said, okay, well, this is all you killed. Okay, but if we find there's more, then the death penalty's back on the table. And he said, oh, okay, well, real quick, though, there were some others.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I just remembered. Yeah. Oh, there was a shitload, actually. So, do over.
Harvey was sentenced to life plus 20 years to run concurrently with the Ohio sentence.
I always love that, life plus 20 years.
Right.
Like they're going to keep his corpse in the cell for 20 years after he dies.
Ultimately, Harvey pled guilty to 37 murders, but he confessed to killing as many as 50 people.
So do you think he rounded it up just to be safe?
I don't know. Initially, he said somewhere around 70.
That is true. Wow.
Minarsin interviewed Harvey after he had been imprisoned. And Minarsin recalled, oh, I was going to kill you too. Minarsin said, what were you going to do, poison me? Oh, no, Harvey said. I had a special plan for you. I was going to take you out into the desert and drive stakes into the ground and tie you to the stakes on top of an anthill and pour honey on you and watch the ants eat you alive.
Oh, good Lord. Wow.
Yeah.
This guy was maniacal.
He was. During the trial, when the names of the victims were being rattled off,
yeah,
which I'm sure took some time, he was giggling.
He was giggling.
Yeah. He didn't seem to have a lot of sympathy or empathy for the people who had died at his hand or their families who were probably in the courtroom. I don't really buy the mercy killing thing.
I wish that the judge could have just gone, you know what? Death penalty's back on the table because you're being an ass. A murderous, murderous ass.
He was being an ass. Well, Donald Harvey was killed by a fellow inmate in prison in March of 2017.
Yes.
So he didn't get to serve his life plus 20. Two things principally motivated the prison attack on Harvey, according to his murderer, James Elliott. First, it was a way to get the attention of prison officials because he was unhappy with the food that was being served at the institution.
Wow.
And he said that the grievances that the prisoners were filing were not being taken seriously. And he was like, you know, some people get these really nice kosher meals and we don't get nice meals. So he murdered this serial killer, you know, because.
Yeah, he wanted a more flavorful Sammy.
Well, no, he didn't eat him.
No,
oh, that's not what you were getting
that's
at?
That's not what I was getting
at. I'm sorry. That last episode's still just rolling around in there. Yeah. Anyway, he also said he figured it would give some closure and peace of mind to the families of Harvey's victims. So, you know, it was a two birds, one bird feeder kind of situation.
Mm-hmm. He just wanted better food. There was no other motive other than that.
Well, he actually was from the area where a lot of the victims came from.
Oh, he was.
So it may have been why he selected him. I mean, maybe he was going to kill someone regardless, but this may have been why he selected Harvey to be his victim.
So it's all come full circle in many ways.
Yeah. So there you go. That's the story of the quote unquote angel of death. I do not think so.
More like the asshole of death.
Donald Harvey, the asshole of death. Oh, can that please be the episode title?
I think a lot of the major podcast platforms might have an issue with that.
I got most of my information from allthat'sinteresting.com, fox19.com, Wikipedia, of course, and thenewsjournal.net.
Well, one of the things that we have learned throughout our journey here on the Box of Oddities is how fucked up some people are. Wow. We go from the heir of the Jameson cannibal incident to the angel of death in two episodes.
Mm.
Well, it is Halloween season. What the hell?
That's right.
Want to thank our most recent patrons of the Box of Oddities.
Hope, Marsha, Marshall, and Shy, thank you for joining us. We are super excited to have you. And I will say that this week, the patrons got some extra special news before anyone else did.
What about the dogger?
Yeah.
The pupper?
Yeah.
Yeah. The Inner Circle gets a little bit of a head start on stuff like that.
Sometimes.
If you would like to become a member, you can do so just by going to theboxofoddities.com. There's a link and you get the episodes ad-free. You get them early and lots of other cool stuff. Like we're going to do a Zoom call.
Tuesday.
Or Tuesday. Yeah, Tuesday. We'd love for you to join us for that. Theboxofoddities.com. We'll see you next time.
Until then, keep flying that freak flag.
Fly it proudly, you beautiful freak.
And so,
let it be known that the Box of Oddities belongs to you, and its fate is in your hands. Therefore, it's been requested by those to whom I report to beseech you for assistance. We ask but one thing of you, to provide a 5-star rating and a positive review. True, that is two things. However, 'tis merely a 5-star rating and a positive review. Also, subscribe to us. Okay, so three things is all we ask. Three things and three things only. Henceforth, the Box of Oddities commits to the telling of stories. Stories of the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected. We wish to offer our deeply felt gratitude and appreciation for your patronage. TheBoxOfOddities.com. Copyright 2021. All rights reserved.
Oh.
Yeah, it's all done.
Well, we knew that was going to happen, didn't we?
Oh, for fuck's sake.
I'd wait a minute before you locked yourself in here because I just farted.
Last thing I wanted to do is put a blanket over my head.
You'd be Dutch ovening yourself.
My name is Greg Jackson. I'm a historian, professor, and the creator of History That Doesn't Suck, a podcast that provides a complete overview of U.S. history through storytelling, yet keeps the rigor you'd expect in a university class. Starting with 22-year-old George Washington in his first battle, join me for a chronological telling of the United States' story, its unlikely revolution, fractious civil war, tenacious inventors, brave reformers, and more. With more than 100 episodes, you can already binge listen your way through the progressive era. Find History That Doesn't Suck wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello everyone, Takuya here.
And I'm Gabby.
And we are the hosts of History of Everything, a podcast which you can probably guess by the name is, well, I mean, it's about everything. Do you want to know why people thought potatoes were evil and would give you syphilis? Are you curious about all the stories of the terrible and stupid ways that people have kicked the bucket over the years? Do you want to hear tales about all of the different badasses of history and the lives that they had brought to life? Well, if so, then look no further. History of Everything is just the right podcast for you. It's available on Spotify, Pandora, and anywhere else that you get your podcast from. Join us for some fun and just see how weird and wacky history can be.